Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Treethart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that tries to be as sensitive about racial issues as our individual life experiences and strains of common sense will let us. That should, we hope, serve us well this week as we discuss two films that feature all-black casts. Yet instead of directly addressing racism in America, each film addresses the more universal topic of family dysfunction. Creed III, the third in the Creed franchise, features, again, Michael B. Jordan, who doubles as star and director. Bruiser is a far more modest production, though the streaming offering is no less intense. Let's begin this week's show by returning to the world of boxing. That's the world that Sylvester Stallone explored nearly five decades ago with Rocky. Now, nine films later, with Stallone serving as one of the producers, we have Creed III, the third in the spin-off series featuring Michael B. Jordan as Adonis Creed, the son of Apollo Creed, whom Rocky Balboa famously first fought and lost to in 1976. Jordan, taking up the reins as director for the first time, tells the story of Adonis, now retired, who is confronted by a specter from his past. That specter comes in the form of a guy named Damian Anderson, played by Jonathan Majors, whose ties to Adonis are something we only gradually come to realize, and which are nothing that Adonis wants to admit to his wife, Bianca, played by Tessa Thompson. While some plot points are ridiculous, and the storyline itself follows the Rocky template to the point of predictability, the emotional issues that the film examines are suitably intense. And two, the actors who play the characters most consumed by those emotions, especially Jordan and breakout star Majors, are as charismatic as any adorning the movie screens of our day.
Yeah, you're not wrong. This movie, I guess if I'm going to continue sort of a boxing metaphor here, almost leans into the punches of the formula that Stallone created. And also, I mean, he didn't create it. He was picking up on sports movie cliches that have existed forever, but he definitely sort of made it into the blueprint that all the movies afterward have followed. And yet for some reason, and I don't know why, because I don't watch boxing, I don't care about boxing, the Rocky formula just always works on me for the most part. And I think Creed III is probably the least of the Creed kind of spinoff series. And yet I still thought it was pretty good. As you said, there's nothing unexpected in it. I mean, this is the kind of movie where a character talks about a medical issue that they have had in the past. And you know, with every fiber in your being, that before the movie is over, you will see that character give a speech on a hospital bed, on their deathbed, and you would be right, because that does happen before the movie ends. And I also thought that this movie introduced some potential complexities that I don't think it follows through on. For instance, Creed and his wife are feeling sort of reticent about the fact that their daughter is starting to take an interest in her father's career. She wants to know more about how the boxing world works. She maybe wants to become a fighter herself. And there's a speech near the beginning where they're talking about, well, what do we do? Because, you know, it's certainly not the greatest industry to go into. It can destroy your body. It can destroy your mind. And then the movie kind of glides past it and almost just kind of sets it up so that we know that by the time Creed 4 comes around, she will probably be the fighter in the ring this time around. Yeah. There's also the matter of Adonis's mother, played by Felicia Rashad, having hid something from him in his childhood that explains sort of the tension between Creed and Dame, short for Damian, that I think the movie could have gotten into and it would have been sort of fascinating, but it doesn't. It's just there in order to set up the next plot beat. But I think that the best thing in this movie is the Damian character that I just mentioned, played by Jonathan Majors. I mean, he's in the great tradition of, you know, the old Rocky villains. I think that if anything, they maybe could have given him even more to do, because there are kind of stretches where he does sort of disappear. I mean, it isn't his movie. It is Creed III, after all. But I think that this actor, Jonathan Majors, is kind of carving out a niche for himself. I did not see the latest Ant-Man movie, but every review I saw said, this movie's take it or leave it. It's not the best. But Jonathan Majors, you know, he shines through the mediocrity. And I think that even though I mostly was positive about Creed III, I think that Jonathan Majors does elevate it beyond just another Rocky sequel. I don't know if he's going to come back. It's sort of like the Fast and Furious movies now, where they introduce a new villain, and then by the next movie, the villain is part of the team of heroes. So, and the Rocky movies did that before. I mean, he fights Apollo Creed in the first one, and by movie number two, they're simpatico. So maybe that will happen in Creed 4 too, that Jonathan Majors will be sticking around, but he's the good guy this time. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to die on the hill of this movie because I understand its problems and its limitations. But like I said, I just, anytime Apollo Creed or Adonis Creed rather steps into the ring, I'm with him. And Michael B. Jordan is just such a charismatic actor and, you know, honestly, a pretty good director. But maybe we can talk about the style of the movie too.
I was pleasantly surprised by Creed 3. I did not really know what to expect. And let's be clear. I mean, this is a boxing movie. And so
Capital B, boxing movie.
Right. Yeah. So for whatever reason, my family was into boxing. I mean, my mother, who you would never suspect would be a boxing aficionado, used to usher at when they would have the boxing matches on the big screen at the local theaters and so forth. So I guess I'm more inured to the violence that's involved with the sport than some others might be. And so I think we do need to be clear about that aspect of Creed 3. But I think people could figure out what they're getting into. It really is the relationship, the course of dealing between the two main characters that I think makes this work. And, you know, they hold back some of the facts about what transpired during their childhood, although it's a gradual reveal and we kind of got it anyway. But yeah, both of these guys command the screen to the point where you can't take your eyes off of them. And I think that they didn't quite exactly know what to do with the Tessa Thompson character as the wife. I mean, she played a more significant role than we've seen the woman helpers in these past movies perform. But there's an interesting aspect to this film that you didn't talk about. Both she and their young daughter, who's the potential aspiring fighter or at least interested in what her dad's doing, both have some sort of hearing loss mm-hmm. or hearing impairment. And so a chunk of the movie is signed. And I thought that that was adding something, you know, a little different and unexpected to the whole dynamic. I also really, I mean, you're right. Jonathan Majors has now had many opportunities to show us his capabilities. I mean, if you look at Last Black Man in San Francisco, and like you're talking about,
The Harder They Fall.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is quite the star. And I think that I've also liked some of the interviews with both him and Michael B. Jordan because they seem to be having a good time together.
Yeah.
Because this is a film about fractured relationships. I cannot speak to, you know, the realistic sort of portrayal of the multi-layered nature of friendships between Black men, for example. But the family, the importance of intergenerational mentoring and so forth, all of those things, as expected, surface in this film. And I thought they handled it well.
Right. Losing touch with your community because Adonis was from Philadelphia and now they're in Los Angeles living in this really amazing house, a house that Bill Gates might own. I mean, it's an amazing house. But, you know, does he have the touch with his old neighborhood? I think that that's important. I wanted to pick up on this notion of these charismatic actors because both these guys own the screen. And I'll tell you the truth that one of the problems I think that Black Panther Wakanda Forever had was, one, Chadwick Boseman died, mm-hmm. and two, they'd killed off the Michael B. Jordan character.
Yeah.
So there was nobody else really to pick up the slack. If they had been able to bring Michael B. Jordan back, they might have had a character they could build that film around that was a lot more charismatic. But I can't say enough about Jonathan Majors. You know, the guy is not classically handsome. I mean, you pair him with Michael B. Jordan, who is, but still Majors just projects vulnerability and strength. And I can't say enough about him.
And he's a villain who you sort of understand and empathize with to a degree.
Exactly.
You understand why he's feeling the way that he does.
It reminds me really of that film that was the two guys, the white guy who was the teacher and his brother played by Tom Hardy. Remember, I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, they end up fighting each other in
Warrior.
Warrior, yeah. Yes, exactly. Because Tom Hardy
yeah.
is another one of those guys
right.
who can be a villain, but you understand him.
Yes, and I want to just throw the direction here by Michael B. Jordan. A lot has been made in interviews about his influences that he's taken from anime, because I guess he's a huge anime nerd. And you see that in the fight sequences in this.
I think he does a quite good job.
There are insert shots that look like they're right out of a cartoon. And there's even a moment in the final fight, the inevitable final fight, where the outside world slips away from them and
right.
they almost go into this imaginary world. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really cool touch. I don't think I've seen that quite like that.
Because you
in a
can imagine
movie.
That would be the hyper focus that
yeah,
would be
yeah.
created
exactly.
in that
exactly.
moment.
So it puts you
and
in
to
that
show
mindset.
It visually,
yeah, it was,
I,
yeah,
thought,
really interesting.
I thought was impressive as well.
Yeah. yeah. So that was our discussion of Creed 3. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Bruiser and to offer our final thoughts on Sunday's Oscars broadcast. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Subscribe to your favorite public radio programs when you become a Spokane Public Radio sustainer. Just like any news or entertainment service you use. But unlike those other services, you decide how much you want to pay. Set up an electronic fund transfer, and monthly installments will be withdrawn automatically from your account. Plus, you can start or stop your subscription at any time you want. As a sustainer, you help make your public radio station strong, and you never have to wonder when to renew. You're part of the community that sustains public radio. Phone 509-328-5729 during business hours or go online to SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click the red donate button and start the process. Working together, we make our community a better place to work, play, and listen.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss Creed 3. Let's now move to a little film titled Bruiser. Though little in its reach, having played the festival circuits and enjoying only a limited theatrical release, Bruiser looms large in theme. It involves a family, a spoiled 14-year-old son, his mother, an adopted father, all of whom must deal with the boy's biological father, who returns to their suburban Alabama town after a 13-year absence. Though the characters are all black, race is referred to only in an implied manner when the adopted father Malcolm, played by Shamir Anderson, has to negotiate with the boy's private school over scholarship monies. Otherwise, it's all about family drama, imbued with universal significance, buoyed by powerful performances by Anderson, Chanel Azura as the mother Monica, Jalen Hall as the boy Darius, and especially by Trevante Rhodes as the bio dad Porter.
We just had the opportunity to pair these two films, and there are some similarities and differences between Bruiser and Creed 3. I think that many people will recognize the young boy who is played by Jalen Hall from Till, because he plays a completely different character in that film. But here we're introduced to our family that will be the focal point of our attention for the next almost 2 hours, when mom picks up her son from what appears to be this la-di-da, snooty, elitist boarding school, and then takes him home. Where's home? We don't really find out any of this information early on, but we do see that the child has kind of been living in two worlds. So he goes back to his hometown, which we assume is someplace in Alabama, and he tries to reconnect sort of with his childhood friends, but it's not a perfect fit. And so he's kind of lost and miserable in that 13-year-old way that seems to be, as Dan pointed out, a universal kind of theme. But he encounters someone unexpectedly who he gravitates toward, and it's this guy who's living on a houseboat down by the river, and he is introduced to Porter, played by Trevante Rhodes. Again, people might recognize him as the adult Sharon from Moonlight. And talk about commanding the screen.
Boy,
I mean,
yeah.
There is just no way that you can take your eyes off of Porter whenever he appears. And this is, again, sort of a slow reveal of what happened back in the day. And we start to piece things together. And we never really know for whom we should root in this particular film, because we can see different aspects of what the characters are bringing toward the young boy, toward their relationships with one another.
Toward each one unto himself.
Right. And so I thought Bruiser, it's a small film, but the acting is superb, and it's a first feature for Miles Warren, and so I think we should keep an eye on him in the future as well.
Yeah, and this movie, it kind of begins like that film Mud, with the kind of wayward kid who encounters Matthew McConaughey,
yes.
Sort of this drifter kind of guy, and they have sort of a strange mentor-mentee relationship, and there's also a crime element going on.
Yeah.
And then it sort of slowly morphs into something that I thought might turn into like a Cape Fear kind of situation, mm-hmm. where this guy is now back in their lives and he won't leave. He won't take leave for an answer. And Bruiser is a movie that, I mean, it's about masculinity and it's about what that looks like and how it's so often wrapped up in violence and about what it means to be a father and what it means to be a son. And I do think that a lot of the nuance of the film is in these performances. I mean, Jalen Hall is this kid who is just filled with so much rage, both because of what's going on in his life, but also because, like you said, he's just a 13-year-old kid, and 13-year-old kids are just, you know, filled with rage sometimes. And it's just building up inside of him, and you can see it. And then Trevante Rhodes, that character, he just keeps slipping through our fingers because we're not sure how we're supposed to feel about him. Is he this malevolent presence that we should recoil from? Is he
Does he deserve a second chance?
Yeah, is he rightfully angry about mm-hmm. what happened in the past? And like you said, we find out details, but again, we're never totally sure who's telling the complete truth. Or is there a complete truth? Are they both misremembering what actually happened?
Right. And the same thing applies to the father, Malcolm, played by Shamira Anderson. Is he really the stand-up dad that he pretends to be?
Right.
Obviously, the boy doesn't think so, and the wife struggles with it, and that's where everything tends to totally break down. And I'm not sure how the movie itself, it's almost like there's a movie that's so steeped in reality that they opted for almost a magical, realistic ending. I'm not so sure about the ending itself. To me, it raises more questions than it answers, but I thought it worked in a way also because it does leave everything in the boy's hands. Where is the boy going to go? What? Because it is his story.
I sort of agree with you, and as the movie was wrapping up, I thought, oh, I think I know how this is going to end because we saw how it ended at the very beginning, and I agree with you that I think it's engineered to leave you with questions. Whether you find that successful is up to you. We should say before we wrap up that this movie, Bruiser, is streaming on Hulu. So you can watch it right now if you have Hulu.
Absolutely. We've got a few minutes left. Was there anything that we found particularly enjoyable about the Oscars?
I just want to say that I thought that this was actually a pretty good show.
I thought so too.
I think in the past, the Oscars' biggest enemy is itself in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And the fact that because, you know, numbers have been dwindling and maybe people aren't taking the awards as seriously as they once did, the Oscars have kind of always had a chip on its shoulder mm-hmm. and has kind of tried to reinvent the wheel in so many ways, and it doesn't always work. This was sort of like a back to basics kind of Oscar ceremony. In fact, the things that I thought didn't work were sort of the dumb little comedy bits that I think are there to, you know, while they're changing sets or getting people moved around, they have to kind of distract you with sleight of hand. I didn't much care for that. I think that in a lot of cases, the best moments happen in speeches. It's just always been that way. And I don't understand why the Oscars have cut off speeches in the past.
Because they're just boring.
Well, yeah, but you kind of have to sit through some of those to get to the really good ones. And this year, there were a lot of really good speeches.
There were
a lot of sort of comeback narratives that happened with the winners. A lot of they finally got their dues mm-hmm. sort of wins.
Except for Angela Bassett.
Yeah. And I hope Angela Bassett does get her due because she's only been nominated twice, which seems wild to me. But yeah, no, I thought it was pretty entertaining. It moved along at a pretty quick clip, except for the middle where it always sort of sags
drags
a little bit.
Well, that's the point at which I turn to Dan and I go,
"Where's Jimmy Kimmel?"
Boring. I said, "Let's bring Jimmy back." And then he comes out with the donkey.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, and maybe I've just become accustomed to some of those goofy moments. But I don't know. For me, honestly, the highlight was Lady Gaga.
Oh, yeah.
Singing. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, after we saw her in the audience and she's all dressed up in a gown and red lipstick, and then all of a sudden there's this woman sitting there with her hair pulled back, no makeup on, in jeans, and it's like, I kept going, who is that? And Mary and Pat's like, going, it's Lady Gaga. And I go, no, it is Lady Gaga.
She had
Gaga.
The same hairdo. Come
Stephanie
on.
Stephanie Germanotta herself.
Yeah. Well, really,
as far as the original song performances go, because all five songs got featured.
RRR.
The song Natu Natu from RRR, which ended up winning, deservedly so. They put on a great kind of recreation of that
Absolutely.
Dance moment from the movie, and that was so much fun.
And Rihanna. Yeah, yeah. I liked Rihanna, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
yeah.
But the high moment, come on, it's when they sang Happy Birthday to the kid from the Irish...
Irish Goodbye, the short.
Yeah,
yeah, that was really sweet. And also, I mean, I think, you know, we talked about this last week. We were all kind of anticipating an Everything Everywhere All at Once sweep, and that was mostly true. It won 7 awards.
Mm, out of 11, yeah.
You go back, that movie's came out a year ago, I think, for it to hold on to the cultural consciousness,
there we go.
For so long. I think the only other movie I can think of, at least in recent memory, that was released so far back that was still remembered was Silence of the Lambs, which was a February release and then kind of swept the Oscars the following year. Usually the Academy has a very short attention span, but this movie hung in there. So I hope that it kind of signals a change in the types of movies we consider Oscar movies, because I don't think anybody thought that that movie was going to be the awards juggernaut that it was
remember,
when it first
came out.
Remember,
it was only a couple of years ago that a fish man, you know,
no, it's true.
Love Story won the best Oscar.
It's true.
So what about All Quiet on the Western Front? I mean, we had some predictions about how that might rise or fall, and I think it did better than some people anticipated.
For sure.
That's right. And it and didn't win Best Adapted Screenplay, which went to
Sarah
Polley, of course. And it shouldn't have won, because it really did change Eric Maria Remarque's novel.
Yeah, and it was good to see Oscar winner Sarah Polley up there.
Yes.
She's also put in, you know, a lifetime of work and finally getting recognized.
As both an actress and a filmmaker.
Correct,
yes.
Correct.
Exactly.
And I think that, you know, I was really happy for the animated short.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was one of our favorites when we talked about those animated shorts.
Not mine.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
You know,
but my Year of Dicks,
yeah,
of course, I was hoping would win.
That
would have
been a nice little surprise.
And the documentary feature is a movie that we all three saw, but we never reviewed, Navalny.
Yeah.
And it's definitely something that people should see. At any rate, with that, it's time to close. You've been listening to Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Creed 3 and Bruiser. Let's take this moment to thank Cassia Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the comic Chris Rock. Rocky takes place in a world where white athletes are as good as black athletes. Rocky is a science fiction film. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.